It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We're standing on the side of Yonge Street where this horrific act was perpetrated. As you can see, the street behind me shut down. Investigators pouring over the scene and expect to be here for several days. Authorities in Toronto have yet to reveal what they believe the motive to be, but a single suspect is in custody after allegedly ramming a white rental van into a multitude of pedestrians. The suspect identified as Alec Manassian, a 25-year-old from the Toronto suburb of Richmond Hill. 10 lives were claimed. 15 people were injured. The brutal force of the large van, leaving some dead at the scene, others fighting for their lives as they were rushed to nearby hospitals for care of severe wounds.
He just went on the sidewalk. He just started hitting everybody, man. The bus stop, everything got shattered because a lot of people got hurt. I've seen a scene I've never seen in my life.
The van with extensive front end damage bearing the logo for Ryder Truck Rentals finally stopped and the driver was taken into custody. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau released a statement reading in part, "On behalf of all Canadians, I offer my heartfelt condolences to the loved ones of those who were killed and my thoughts for the fast and full recovery of those injured. America's leaders have expressed solidarity." Vice President Mike Pence tweeted, "POTUS and I are closely monitoring the attack on innocent people in Toronto this afternoon and we are with the Canadian people tonight as they grieve the loss of life and injured. The American people stand shoulder to shoulder with our neighbors in Canada." Ralph Goodale, the Minister of Public Safety, said that there is no known national security link as they continue to investigate this. Meanwhile, back in New York, the NYPD is working with the Joint Terrorism Task Force monitoring the developments here in Toronto. But at this point in time, quote, "there is no known nexus to New York City."
All right, that was Molly Line of Fox News, and that's a story that I'm sure you heard plenty of last night. Sandy Rios with you in the morning. 10 now confirmed dead. The description is that the driver of this van was very deliberate, hitting people, perfectly calm. You heard a little clip in there. Molly was played a clip, I think it was a cab driver, who was emotional and explaining it. You know, I heard him on an earlier news report, and he went into much more graphic detail. He was so traumatized, and he sort of described some of what he saw. It was hard to take, and I'm sure that's why they edited it out. So now we know who the shooter is, a guy named Alec Manassian. You can see his smiling face, you know, every few minutes on the news. So who is this Alec? A-L-E-K-M-I-N-A-S-S-I-A-N. Of course, we think of terrorism. Why wouldn't we think of terrorism, since this is what we've been seeing in major cities from Paris to other cities in France, London? This is the new method, it seems, by Islamists. You know, who do we know? How do we know? Maybe they keep telling us, oh, but we're not sure it's terror. In fact, this is interesting. I was reading another article this morning, and first of all, when they arrested him, the officers yelled at him and said, "Get down or you'll be shot." And his response, "Shoot me in the head." Well, they didn't shoot him in the head. He's alive. But this is the part that really caught my eye. The Associated Press reported that the investigation has not been turned over to the Canadian Mounted Police, which they say is a sign that authorities don't think this attack was related to terrorism. So, and then we're hearing all kinds of reports, comments from Canadians in leadership, as always, talking about how multicultural, how Muslims are such a part of life in Canada, which they are. I don't have a problem with that if they are not Sharia adherents. I would imagine most of them are, or at least would not confess that they weren't. So to make that distinction, however, we know there's a problem. There is a serious problem. And it's funny because we've had a time sort of quiet here. Since President Trump has been in office, you'll notice there haven't been many Islamic attacks, not in this country. Maybe even they've quietened around the world. And, of course, ISIS is nearly gone, nearly defeated, still a remnant. That's amazing, isn't it? I mean, a year or two ago, didn't we thought that was all, that was what we talked about all the time. But that does not mean that the radical teachings of Sharia and Islamic law, which Sharia is the foundation of Islamic law, have changed. So, well, we'll see. You know, maybe this was just a Alec, you know, mimicking Manassian, the acts of Islamists around the world. Maybe he's just imitating it. He had no bad intentions, at least not Islamic intentions. So that reminded me of another story that came to my mind this morning. And rather than tell you about it, this is something that's been happening in New York City. This is a CBS report. Let's listen.
Closely at this exclusive surveillance video as a man is seen running down the street, then attacks another man and forces him against a fence, choking and punching him.
I turned around and I see that he's right behind me and he jumped me. And then he says, I hate Jews.
The victim, an Orthodox Jewish man, was left with a black eye, broken rib, and scratches on his neck and back. He didn't want to give his name, but says he was walking home from his synagogue Saturday afternoon near Rutland Road and Schenectady Avenue when he said hi to a stranger who then got very angry.
I greeted him, hello, and go and continue. Next thing I know is that he says, I don't like Jews. Who are you talking to? I don't talk to Jews. He put me in a headlock and I'm trying to maneuver out of him, and he's in the meantime I'm screaming help, 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 and the next thing, and he says, you don't need help, we're gonna kill you right here.
Luckily, two people passing by pulled the suspect off, holding him back, helping the victim escape. You can see he goes into a neighbor's yard to retrieve his hat and glasses, but the suspect continues to stalk him as the two Good Samaritans talk him out of it. Since the assault, police have been here monitoring the neighborhood, but the victim's family says even with the increased security, they're scared to go out on their own street.
There's fear. There's a lot of fear. The thing we know is that, unfortunately, there are people out there that want to kill us for one reason, because we are a Jew.
This is the second time this week a Jewish man has been targeted. On April 14th, a 42-year-old man was assaulted on the 600 block of Eastern Parkway just after midnight, punched in the face repeatedly. NYPD's hate crimes unit is investigating both incidents. They haven't yet determined if the attacks are connected. In Crown Heights, Natalie Dudridge, CBS 2 News.
All right, now, the thing about the Orthodox Jewish man, he had just come from synagogue. It wasn't nighttime. It wasn't late. He was walking. You can see it. They show a video of the guy running up behind him and attacking him and beginning to beat him. You know, who knows? Maybe he was, you know, a Presbyterian. I don't know. But I kind of think not. He said to the man, as she reported, you don't need help. I'm going to kill you right here. I don't talk to Jews. He had just spoken, the Orthodox Jewish man had just spoken to him on the street, and that was very offensive to this man. I guess we'll call him the Presbyterian. But this is, and as you heard in that report, this is the second time just this week that a Jewish man has been targeted and beaten in New York. Listen, it's epidemic. I haven't even talked about this, what's happening in France, what's happening in Germany. In terms of the anti-Semitism, it is absolutely frightening. I hope to do an entire show on that with some of my Jewish friends, and we'll do that soon. But that reminds me of other things. I got an invitation to a forum by Middle East Forum. That's Daniel Pipes, in case you wonder. I love Daniel. And of course, he's public enemy number one from the Islamists. But there is going to be what they call, every year they have Muslim Advocacy Day, where Muslims descend on Capitol Hill to, you know, lobby for Muslim issues and make their voices heard. That's their actual phrase, make their voices heard. It's a growing annual event. It's billed as combating the Islamophobic rhetoric and the anti-Muslim policies being put into place by President Trump. Now, some of the organizers are Muslim, are tied to nonviolent Islamism, which is, I don't know, maybe you could say CARE. Is they purport to be nonviolent while they actually are supported by terrorist group Hamas. Other organizers are tied to outright jihadist terrorism. So they're organizing this, Muslim Advocacy Day on Capitol Hill. And they wander the halls up and down. They flood the halls, actually. And so that's something else that's been going on for a long time. And I always thank George Bush for starting this, George W. Bush. It was under his watch that this started, with the help of Grover Norquist and Karl Rove. And that's a long story that I could tell again sometime, but not in this moment. They opened the floodgates wide. And let me just say that Muslims who have another purpose, a deceptive purpose, whose goal is to take over this country, It's called Civilization Jihad. If you haven't read about it, you should. Andy McCarthy is probably one of the best writers about it. Are filling the hallways. Staffers, high posts, nominations. Barack Obama made it worse. Of course, he pointed so many to Homeland Security. People that do not have our best interest at heart. We really have been infiltrated by the enemy. There's no question about it. And that reminds me of one other quick thing, which I hope to do a whole interview on this too. Keith Ellison, who is our Muslim representative from Minnesota. We have two now, one from Indiana, one from Minnesota. And everybody thinks that's so wonderful. Keith Ellison is the vice chairman of the Democratic National Committee. But he is a very dishonest, boy, that's not even harsh enough. Let's just say he's a liar. How about that? He claimed in a big article recently in a Minneapolis, I think it was the Minneapolis Star, that he doesn't have anything to do with Louis Farrakhan. He's, you know, appalled by the things that he says. But we know, because we know his history, and there's a fingerprint that he was totally involved with Louis Farrakhan. He was the local leader of the Nation of Islam. When he first ran for office, he ran under the Nation of Islam pseudonym Keith Ellison Muhammad. That was his second Nation of Islam title. He had another one. I don't know what that. Keith Hakim. Yeah, he's tied to the hip with Louis Farrakhan, but he's denying it. And of course, he's a little untrustworthy. But don't worry, he's in the Congress, and I believe that Keith Ellison is on one of the intelligence committees. So we have Houston. We have problems. We have been such a silly, foolish people for the last several decades. And we have elected mindless, silly people to serve us in Congress. There are exceptions, but they have reflected us. I will never forget when Bill Clinton was elected for the second time after the Monica Lewinsky scandal broke. It was one of the lowest points for me in terms of my public life on the radio, because I could not believe that after people really, really did know who he was and what he was doing, it wasn't just Monica. There was an epidemic of terrible behavior while he was serving in the White House. I thought for sure that people would not vote for him, but when they did, it just really hit me. This is who America has become. There's some comfort in having someone who has, there was this whole push to make us believe that what you did privately had nothing to do with your public life. And I realized that America had sunk so low because maybe, cable TV, internet, pornography, whatever, that there was maybe some comfort in thinking that an American president could be so decadent, could be performing a sex act in the Oval Office while, doing business, taking phone calls. It was sort of funny and not serious. And so he was reelected. And honestly, I was personally devastated. I couldn't believe it. But I have to say that that doesn't apply just to Bill Clinton. It applies to so many people that we've sent to Washington who are not men of integrity or women. Who are not serious-minded, don't even hardly know what they're talking about, have their staffers read their speeches. You see a lot of these older senators, and there's a ton of them, that would probably describe most of them. They read a script all the time. That's because their 24-year-old aides are the ones who are doing the work, like they have the wisdom to do this, writing the speeches for these senators who stand and with their hair perfectly coiffed in their beautiful suits and read the script that the 24-year-old aide has given them. That's kind of the silliness to which we have descended. But this is not silly. While we have been feckless and irresponsible in our duties as citizens, we have allowed our nation's capital to be infiltrated by people who don't wish us anything good. So enough of that. When we come back, I want to play you something that I hope will encourage your heart, because you probably need it after that, right? And Congressman Jim Jordan was on Fox just a few days ago, and I want you to hear what he said and why many people believe he should be the next Speaker of the House. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Did you ever sit down to watch TV with your family, only to turn it off because of bad language? TV Guardian is technology that mutes foul language in real time while you're watching television. TV Guardian was born out of the desire to watch a movie with the family without exposing children or adults to coarse or foul language existing in most of today's entertainment. The closed caption feature within all programming is used to look ahead, detect the offensive words, and mute them. Using simple level filters and subfilters, TV Guardian can be used to filter content for your family. Religious references in mainstream programming are often offensive, using God's name in cursing, so TV Guardian offers filtering for those as well. More information is available at tvguardian.com/dish. tvguardian.com/dish.
American Family Radio is grateful for the support of TV Guardian.
The influence of media is so very powerful over a person.
American Family Association and the family of Anna Bright want to warn you about the Netflix program 13 Reasons Why.
I really feel in my heart with all my soul that that show contributed to her passing.
After binge-watching season one of 13 Reasons Why, 14-year-old Anna Bright committed suicide in the same manner depicted on the show.
To portray suicide, first of all, as an option, is not a good thing. To portray it graphically, it leaves you vulnerable to the enemy's attack, which I think it definitely did for our daughter.
She took a permanent solution to a temporary situation.
Help protect our teens by signing the AFA petition urging Netflix to pull Season 1 and cancel the upcoming Season 2 of 13 Reasons Why. You can see Anna's story and sign the petition at AFA.net. That's AFA.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name's Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
After more than two decades of service, the WW Bridal Boutique in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania has closed its doors. The family-owned Christian business could no longer endure the hatred from a militant mob, triggered because the bridal shop did not provide services to same-sex ceremonies.
The hate has just been overwhelming, and it's been for 4 years.
That's the voice of Lisa Boucher. She shared her story on my nationally syndicated talk show.
They didn't just attack me and my mother. They actually attacked our children and, you know, saying that they were going to burn the store down. They wanted us to be raped. They wanted our children to be raped. They wanted us to have bullets in our heads and our children to have bullets in their heads and be buried.
It's appalling what's happened to this dear family and their precious business, bullied and terrorized because they refused to renounce their religious beliefs. In America, I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The federal government doesn't just print money to stay in business, it borrows it. And members of Congress, eager to be reelected, don't seem willing to do much about it. This year, Washington will collect $26,000 per household, but spend $33,000. That $6,800 gap is what Congress puts on a credit card, according to OMB budget figures. More than a third goes to Social Security and Medicare. A typical couple retiring today pays $500,000 into Social Security, but will take out $600,000 in benefits. Medicare, $140,000 in, $420,000 out, according to an Urban Institute study.
We would have to more than double families' taxes just to pay the benefits that have been promised.
Congressional generosity also extends to many social programs, food stamps, Medicaid, welfare, $6,000 a year per household. The military, more than $5,000.
I think it goes to like the army and like a bunch of politicians' pockets.
Not exactly, but after decades of overspending, interest on the national debt is 7% of the budget, almost $2,500 a year per household.
Interest is the ticking time bomb. You have soaring deficits and interest rates that are about to go up.
The rest of your $33,000 pays for veterans, federal pensions, Homeland Security, education, the FDA, highways, and foreign aid.
It's really difficult when seniors are going to spend one-third of their adult lives in taxpayer-funded retirement, and we're squeezing out every other priority that goes to those under the age of 65.
So how does the Republican Revolution of 94, the Tea Party of 2010, become the do-nothing Congress of today? Well, one problem, experts say, is Congress not only votes on a third of the budget that is discretionary, two-thirds of spending is on autopilot. With 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day, it's easier to ignore the problem than tackle it.
That was William Lajeunesse. You know, he's one of my favorite reporters on Fox. He really is. And it was a great report, as usual. Sandy Rios back with you. William is, of course, talking about another way that Congress has become so ineffective. That's a kind term, isn't it? They're spending us into oblivion. We've talked about that a lot. And I talked to you yesterday about how Speaker Paul Ryan, who had a big part in that, pushed through that $1.2 trillion budget that went through, 6 weeks ago? Funding all of Planned Parenthood, funding everything that the left wanted, working with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell to make that happen. That's, yes, he did that. Mr. Budget Hawk. And that's not the first time. It's been his pattern since he's been in Congress. So now he's leaving. But before he leaves, of course, he's trying to get amnesty for illegal immigrants passed as well. We told you that yesterday. It's called the Queen of the Hill process. And it's going to come in the guise of a thing called Resolution 774 on a bill called H.R. 4760. I know that's complicated. In fact, we'll put that article from Conservative HQ on our Facebook page again today because it itemizes all the congressmen, many of them yours, who have signed on to this Queen of the Hill process to help Speaker Ryan get his wish before he leaves. Well, that's the reason why many people believe that the next person I want to feature should be Speaker, because he says what he means and means what he says. He's taken a lot of heat. He's the founder of the Freedom Caucus. Jim Jordan was on Fox, I believe, this past weekend, and it was such a good exchange that I wanted you to hear part of it. Let's listen.
You've seen James Comey. You've read the memos.
Yeah.
Where are the discrepancies? What's the truth here?
The biggest thing that jumped out to me was the January 6th meeting, because he talks about the news hook that CNN wanted to talk about this dossier, print this dossier, which they ultimately did them in BuzzFeed. But I think the real news hook was James Comey talking about it. It gave it the legitimacy that the press wanted. So Clapper, I think, is the one who probably went out and leaked it right after that.
You mean the press was working on it, CNN, the dossier?
They had it.
So if you have the cover of "We briefed the president-elect," then they can report it.
Gives it weight, and that's exactly what happened. My guess is, I don't know this for sure, but Clapper's the one who orchestrated this. He's the one who told Comey, you go in, you talk to the president. You're the one staying on. You brief him on the dossier, the salacious, unverified dossier. And then, of course, right then after that, CNN talks about it. Prints it, and then BuzzFeed printed the whole thing.
So now the IG is looking into these memos. What was classified? Is any of it illegal? How do you think this ends for James Comey?
Probably not good. McCabe did the same thing. McCabe leaked information. He did it for personal reasons, as the inspector general points out, not for the public interest, not for the benefit of the FBI. So this could be the same kind of thing. I think the other thing that jumped out at me was when Comey wrote the memos, he talked about these were personal and all, and that wasn't really a leak. But he sent them to McCabe, Jim Baker, and Jim Rybicki. And what's interesting about those three individuals, Andrew McCabe has been fired and now faces criminal referral. Jim Baker, general counsel, has been demoted and reassigned. And Jim Rybicki, former chief of staff, has left the FBI. So all three of those top people either fired, demoted, or gone.
Not a good sign for
James
Comey.
Not a good sign, right.
He also discusses that my initial assessment is that this memo should be classified as secret. I mean, this is someone who understood his own musings even after a meeting or something relevant for classification.
Right. No, we'll see. You know, we don't know how many he actually sent. It's been reported that four were sent to Daniel Richmond. Also, one other thing that came out. When I read through them, I remembered something. We interviewed the Oversight Committee and the Judiciary Committee interviewed Jim Rybicki. And during that deposition, it was brought out that Daniel Richmond, the guy who information was leaked through to the New York Times, had this special status called special government employee status, where he could sort of come and go in the FBI, which may not mean much, but it seems kind of interesting. The guy that Comey leaks through is a good friend who had this sort of unfettered access into the FBI.
All right, that's Congressman Jim Jordan on Fox and Friends over the weekend. And I could comment on the content there, but I think the point that I want to make to you is that Congressman Jordan not only understands these issues, I remember what a bulldog he was on the Benghazi situation. I mean, he understands and articulates, and he doesn't back off. I'm sure he's made President Trump mad sometimes because he's gone after the Justice Department. He's gone after lots of people. because he is really, I think, a man of the people. Somehow, he's managed to serve in Washington without forgetting who he is and why he's there. I'm going to give you another illustration. He goes on to talk to the Fox and Friends hosts about the Cohen raid. That was the president's attorney and the Clinton emails. Let's listen.
There was a report that Jeff Sessions told the White House, if Rosenstein is fired, I'm gone too. You met with Rosenstein. What do you know?
Well, we mostly met with Mr. Rosenstein to get him to give us the information. You know, 2 weeks ago, Mark Meadows and I met with the new point person, John Lausch, who's designed to, you know, facilitate getting information to the Congress, the U.S. attorney from the Chicago area. And we weren't real impressed with, I mean, John Lausch seems like a nice guy, but I asked him four simple questions. I said, what's the approximate number of documents we're entitled to? What's the number of steps in the current process? What's the standard used to determine what gets redacted and what doesn't? And when are we going to get the information that we're supposed to get? And the answer to all four questions was, I don't know. So we just stressed with Mr. Rosenstein, that's got to improve. And if it doesn't, everything's on the table, including contempt and impeachment.
And you're sending a letter tomorrow?
We're sending a letter tomorrow, actually, Mr. Zeldin, Mr. Meadows and I, to the Attorney General. And we're going to ask him, on this raid of Michael Cohen's office and business, was the Attorney General consulted? Because it was sort of done outside of the umbrella of the special counsel.
Say, yeah.
And Rosenstein has been reported as the one who made the call to go ahead and seek the search warrant. I want to know if the Attorney General was, because if it's outside of Russia, Mr. Sessions is conceivably not recused. Mm. And we're not talking about just any attorney. We're talking about the attorney for the President of the United States. It would seem to me that would rise to the highest level of the Justice Department before some kind of decision like that is made.
On that point, can I ask you one quick thing?
Sure.
A viewer sent me this. In the Comey book, instead of getting a search warrant, Comey says, for Clinton's lawyers' laptops that held classified emails before they were deleted,
right,
the Justice Department negotiated access, this is according to Comey, over a period of weeks out of concern for attorney-client privilege.
Yeah.
So they spent weeks
negotiating, yeah,
and they barged down the door for Cohen.
Exactly. They called up Cheryl Mills. Cheryl, what time can we come over? What would work when your schedule? I mean, that's sort of the approach.
Yeah. At 4 in the morning,
yeah,
James Cohen.
As opposed to kicking
Michael
down
Cohen.
The door of Michael Cohen. So when we had Secretary Clinton under oath in front of the Benghazi committee, I asked her, would you agree? Remember, she had like 60,000 emails.
Yep.
Would you agree to let a neutral third party, like a retired federal judge, examine the emails on the front end and let that individual decide which ones are personal that you get to keep, deal with wedding or whatever, and which ones belong to the committee, to the government, mm-hmm, for the American people to see. She would not agree to that. President Trump would take that deal in a heartbeat, mm, today, right?
Yeah.
So that is how different it was. She and her lawyers, David Kendall, Cheryl Mills, Heather Samuelson, got to decide on the front end which ones they kept, which one came back to the taxpayers.
Double standard.
Congressman Jim Jordan with Fox and Friends, I think it was over the weekend. You know, many people now are calling for Congressman Jordan to publicly declare his willingness to run for Speaker of the House, to begin a groundswell effort to draft him, to bring along with him. I think there are some 18 candidates in the primaries who are pledged to join the House Freedom Caucus and who feel the same way that Congressman Jim Jordan does. And Mark Meadows and others in the Freedom Caucus, Dave Brad, I could list the whole list, but I'm just saying that those are the guys who are championing the Constitution and the American people. And so, but Jim Jordan seems to be the one that cream rises to the top. Jim is a great leader. He's a former wrestling coach, but his mind is so clear, and he's just so winsome. And then I want you to hear the exchange then on the panel, because they morph into the subject of being Speaker of the House. Let's listen.
So before we let you go, I want to get your thoughts on the speakership of the House. Paul Ryan said he's not running for re-election. And according to one op-ed, they say that Jim Jordan could be the one to save the GOP for 2018. What is your thought?
I don't know about all that, but I do know that if and when there's a race for Speaker, I've been encouraged by colleagues to consider that. I'm definitely doing that. Right now, Paul Ryan's a speaker. He has indicated he's going to remain the speaker for the remainder of this Congress. The most important thing, and I said this on the floor of the House a week and a half ago, more important than who the speaker is next year is what Republicans do this year.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't get back focused on what the American people elected us to do, sent us here to do, then there may not be a race for speaker, maybe a race for minority leader. But if we do the things we're supposed to do, build a wall, make sure the tax cuts are permanent, reform our welfare system, those things that we campaigned on and they elected us to do, we do that, I think we'll be all right. Then we'll have the race.
If you did run, is it a reflection of the fact that conservatives have been dissatisfied with House leadership and its commitment?
The biggest example is what happened 4 weeks ago, this omnibus spending bill. On the process side, on the policy side, on the process side, we had 15 hours to look at a bill, 2,232 pages. We got 1 hour of debate. It spent more money than we've seen in the last 10 years, with the exception of the Obama stimulus package. And then when it came to policy, we funded things in that bill that we told the American people we wouldn't. And we didn't fund things in that bill that we said we would. So it was wrong on a policy standpoint and certainly wrong on the whole process. That's what's wrong with the place. That's what needs to change.
Thanks for coming in.
All right. So that's, again, Congressman Jim Jordan from Ohio. And just to kind of lay this out, you know, the 2018 elections, the primaries are happening right now. And would you please take the responsibility to go online and find out when the primary is in your state. And then find out, go to Conservative Review or go to some outlet. You know, AFA has a great voter guide. I'm assuming we have them for all these candidates, but I can't promise that because I hadn't checked before I started speaking about this. Go somewhere where you think you can, to someone that you think you can trust about these local candidates, and do not wait until the fall election to vote. Do not. Because if you want good men in office, they generally get beaten in the primary because enough people don't come out. They always yawn their way through it and then come in November. If we want to get good people in, you have to vote. And if I'll tell you what's at stake. We started talking with this segment with William Lajeunesse's report on taxes and spending. It's out of control. I alluded to committee chairmanships, to committees, and how they conduct these investigations, whether it's the alleged Russian collusion or what's happening at Justice or what happened with CIA, what happened with Loretta Lynch, what happened with James Comey, Benghazi, you fill in the blanks. There's so much corruption, and it can only be managed by a strong Congress. So what's been happening is when Republicans have been in place, under Paul Ryan and under John Boehner as well, they made sure that conservatives didn't get anywhere near those committees. They gave them posts that were, they might sit on them, but they could never chair them. That's why the Benghazi committee was really a joke, the investigation, in spite of what you think about Trey Gowdy. He's all talk and no cattle, all hat and no cattle, as they say. And I can tell you things that are not good because he just doesn't do what he acts like he's going to do or what he says. He just does not deliver. And so these committees are very important. So if there is not a conservative as Speaker of the House, that's the future of the committees at stake. Of course, building the wall. We have this southern border invasion happening even as we speak. This whole caravan, alleged caravan of people coming across the border trying to invade our country. And we're helpless to stop it because the Supreme Court just decided the president can't, you know, we have to have a better law. So we have to take it back to Congress and let them make a better law. Well, good luck with that. That's all I can say. And then we've got the tax cuts. We've got the moral issues. All that to say that 2018 is really important. And I personally think we need someone like Congressman Jim Jordan running for speaker in cooperation with all of us working to try to get these good people, these patriots who love our country, into that Congress so we can flip it around. We need, you know, the people that are talking about the look. It's not a matter of just supporting Donald Trump. It's a matter of supporting what he promised he would do. That's the point. And so we want people who will keep those promises, will not forget what the promises were and are committed, as Congressman Jordan is, to actually doing what he said he was going to do. So 2018 is very important. Will you please check your calendar and make sure you know when the primary in your state is taking place? And then we'll talk more about it. You know, you can probably Google and find out who your candidates are and get some idea. But remember that the public perception will often be the opposite of what's really true. I'll try to help you make way some of those, but there are hundreds of races. I can't possibly help you. You're going to have to do some due diligence. I think you will do that, won't you? Because we need to do something. Let's just see this thing to the end. Let's finish well. Don't give up. It's not time to give up yet. When we return, Paul Marengoff will join us because all these nominations, like, you know, Mike Pompeo, interesting twist on all of it. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The Toys R Us official statement concerning its imminent store closure said, "Most of our end customers are newborns and children, and as a result, our revenues are dependent on the birth rates in the countries where we operate. In recent years, many countries' birth rates have dropped or stagnated as their population ages. The only developed country in the world producing enough children to replace and grow its national population is Israel. Overt hostility toward children that stems from a low regard for life destroys commerce, cultures, and countries."
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This week on Truth for Life, Alistair Begg concludes our study titled, "What Now?" and begins a new series titled, "To Know Christ." We're looking at who Jesus really is and what he came to do. Listen Monday through Friday to Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
You wish you could stop thinking about it, but you can't. It never quite leaves your thoughts. Even in the joyful moments, it's there. The sadness, shame, and sorrow. You know you can't go on like this, so don't. Phone the International Helpline for Abortion Recovery at 866-482-LIFE. Your call is confidential, and you'll be talking with someone who's already been where you are and found the way out. 866-482-LIFE.
Are you a responsible person who finds yourself growing deeper and deeper in credit card debt and you're not sure how to fix the problem? Then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity Debt Management is a nonprofit organization that will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, and reduce your interest rates by as much as 60%. You'll save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. It's not a loan. It's a smart way to relieve your stress, meet your obligations, and preserve your self-respect. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Gather up your bills and call this toll-free number for a free, no-obligation debt analysis. 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813. If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The United States is poised to have a new Secretary of State with the ability to be among our best. President Trump deserves great credit for nominating CIA Director Mike Pompeo to the job and for helping persuade the Senate Foreign Relations Committee's deciding vote, Republican Senator Rand Paul, to support him yesterday. Of course, the full Senate has to go along too, but with Democratic Senators Heidi Heitkamp, Joe Manchin, and Joe Donnelly announcing their support for Director Pompeo, it's all over but the shouting. And shouting there may be, since some Democrats have chosen to cloak their naked partisanship with loud condemnations of Mr. Pompeo's informed and legitimate concerns about Sharia supremacism, which he shares with President Trump. Ditto his robust national security-mindedness. It's a very good thing such critics are in the minority in the Senate and the country. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee is still considering its next steps on how to get the nomination of Mike Pompeo onto the Senate floor here, where it is expected to succeed. But it's this issue of getting it out of the committee that's been such an issue. Now, we woke up this morning thinking that the nomination would not advance to this committee because Kentucky Senator Rand Paul was going to vote with the Democrats, and that wasn't going to be enough to get him out. Well, there was a change in that, and then we thought maybe he would get out of committee with what's called a favorable recommendation. But then one Republican Republican senator is absent. Senator Isaacson is in Georgia attending a funeral. So now they're deadlocked at 10:10, throwing this all up. But the unexpected bit of news happened right before this business meeting with an unexpected tweet.
Having received assurances from President Trump and Director Pompeo that he agrees with the president on these important issues, I have decided to support his nomination to be our next Secretary of State. He joins Democratic Senators Heidi Heitkamp, Joe Donnelly, and Joe Manchin in supporting Pompeo's nomination, likely enough to confirm him. The president tweeted this morning, quote, "Hard to believe obstructionists may vote against Mike Pompeo for Secretary of State. The Dems will not approve hundreds of good people, including the ambassador to Germany. They are maxing out the time on approval process for all. Never happened before. Need more Republicans."
A majority of Democrats continue their pointless obstruction to score cheap political points with their base as a willful attempt to undermine American diplomacy.
Democrats claim they oppose Pompeo because they say he'll fail to check the president's worst instincts. Republicans say Pompeo has the trust of the president, and note the Senate confirmed him as CIA director by a 66-32 margin. As a national security-focused nominee, they say Pompeo deserves confirmation, just as the Senate easily confirmed secretaries of state for Presidents Barack Obama, George W. Bush, and their predecessors. Republicans say they're pushing to confirm Pompeo in the coming days. NATO hosts a meeting later this week for foreign ministers. Pompeo says he wants to be there. Officials will likely discuss the Iran nuclear agreement at that summit. President Trump's deadline on whether to withdraw from the Iran deal is less than 3 weeks away.
All right, that was Rich Hetson, who always does such a great job. And I wanted you to hear that because it sort of lays out the drama that has been Mike Pompeo's nomination. You know, Pompeo was just in North Korea, surprise visit, the beginning of last week, I think. He's already been doing some incredible things, no question about it, and yet they were poised to reject him. So you heard how it all played out. I think Rich reported that Kunz, senator from Maryland, agreed to vote present so that it could get through the committee. I think he just said that. Sorry, my mind wandered, but I wanted to make sure you knew that part. So now it goes to the Senate floor. I've asked Paul Marengoff to join me because Paul is an attorney. He's been in D.C. for years. He is highly respected. He writes for Powerline, and he follows these nominations. Good morning, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Sandy. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. All right, so I would just love to know what you thought about Pompeo's confirmation so far and how people can understand what's happening there and why this is so difficult.
Well, it's difficult because we're in the middle of a Democratic resistance. They don't try to hide it. It's a self-proclaimed resistance, and that means basically resisting everything important that President Trump tries and even things that aren't that important. This one happens to be quite important, and it's at the center of national security. It's at the center of this North Korean crisis that's plagued the country really for decades. And here's a man who's, you know, helping to break the logjam. And the Democrats are embarrassing themselves through this obstruction. And it's crumbling. I mean, the chair has kind of been pulled out from under them, not just by Rand Paul, but by, you know, the Democrats who have to run, have to actually face constituents in states that aren't, you know, that they don't have a lock on. So their irresponsibility is catching up with them. A few of them realize that and are bailing out. But this resist Trump thing is out of control. And Americans, even those who aren't that particularly fond of President Trump, are still patriotic. They're still fair-minded. And the Democrats are you know, blowing all that up with this ridiculous obstruction at the expense potentially of national security. But apparently, thank God, it's not going to work this time.
Yeah, we have to go one nomination at a time. And there are hundreds of nominations, and I'd hope that we could talk about more of them. But there's one in particular I want to talk to you about. Last time we spoke, Paul, we talked about Kai Feldblum. And Kai, of course, has been around for years. Those of us that have been in public policy have watched her and been horrified, really, by the things that she has done. She's been on the EEOC for a number of years. Yeah, and so now they're thinking about, they have nominated her for a five-year term. And let me just remind people about her just for a second, Paul, before I ask you for the update on this. Kai is a sexual radical. You describe her as the architect of President Obama's radical LGBT agenda. This is something that she said, "I'm having a hard time coming up with any case in which religious liberty should win. sexual liberty should win in most cases. There can be a conflict between religious liberty and sexual liberty, but in almost all cases, the sexual liberty should win because that's the only way that the dignity of gay people can be affirmed in any realistic manner. And then how is that translated to the job that she's done on the EEOC, Paul?
Well, it's translated into the EEOC finding that it's employment discrimination, not to have, not to allow people to use whichever bathroom they would like to, whichever shower they would like to, whichever locker room they would like to. I mean, that's the most, I think that's the most egregious, finding that to be sex discrimination. The people who wrote the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act would be rolling over in their graves if they thought that they were mandating that sort of thing. It's even quite dubious whether discrimination based on sexual preference is actually outlawed by federal law. I don't think it is. I mean, I'm not in favor of discriminating against people on the basis of sexual preference for employment, for example. But it's never been thought that's against federal law. The feds didn't get into didn't go there, but High Feldblum took them there through an administrative interpretation, and she's been able to sell it in certain, not all, but in certain courts dominated by radical Democrats. So it has had major consequences in the law.
Yeah, let me mention one particular case that came to my mind. There was a funeral home director, I believe in Indiana, the Sixth Circuit, and he had an employee that was undergoing gender transitioning, wearing women's clothes to the funeral home to comfort people. And the business owner is a Christian, and he said, "I can't have that." But he lost in court, and that was a suit brought by Kai Feldblum's EEOC. Okay, so now that gives people an idea. She's been renominated by whom? By the Trump administration for a 5-year term.
Yeah, for unbelievably, she has been renominated by the Trump administration. To be as fair as I can, it's part of a package. There's also two Republicans who've been nominated along with her, and the Democrats are entitled to. I mean, there is these are supposed to be politically mixed. Normally, if a commission is full, you have three of the party in power and two of the party out of power. I don't want to get too deep on the weeds on that, but that's why it makes sense to nominate a Democrat. But it makes no sense to nominate this radical Democrat who, as you say, is the architect of the Obama LGBT agenda.
Last time we spoke, it seems to me, Paul, that the sweetener here were that at least one of the other two Republican nominees was sort of a relative of someone in the White House, as I recall. I don't know if you want to address that, but I mean, there were like murky reasons. And I recall very clearly you saying that Kai Feldblum was worth two Republicans any day, that she would outwork, outsmart them. She knows the committee, and it would be dangerous to have her in that position. Did I fairly represent your remarks?
I think you got it 100%.
Yeah, so, all right. So today, you wrote an article yesterday with an update on Kai, and we were eager to hear what's going on with this. She's not in yet. How have we stopped this?
Senator Mike Lee deserves the credit. He put a hold on it. He blocked it, as far as I know, single-handedly. I don't want to be unfair to anybody else, but to my knowledge, it's Mike Lee who stood in the way. To sweeten the deal, they've agreed, as I understand it, that the Republican nominee for general counsel of the EEOC, the guy who, or woman, in this case, it'll be a woman, who actually brings the lawsuits and kind of runs the legal side with the approval of the commissioners. They've agreed to advance that nomination out of committee, which is supposed to happen today. I don't know if it will. And that will set the stage to confirm four people, the three GOP nominees, plus Kai Feldblum. So I guess the question then becomes whether Kai Feldblum for the Democrats is worth three Republicans, and they clearly think it is. I tend to agree that the point here is that the Republicans control the Senate. We saw it again with the Pompeo nomination, where Rand Paul happily or mercifully cooperated. So we control the Senate. We should be able to conform our people without, having to confirm radical Democrats. Sure, the Democrats should have a voice on, should have two of the spots on the commission, But we don't have to confirm, you know, the most radical of them for these spots. They certainly don't confirm the most radical Republicans to be commissioners when they're in power. In fact, one holdover was blocked last year. Connie Baker, a very good commissioner, was blocked. So, you know, it's not a deal that we should make, in my view.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, AFA has AFA Action. American Family Association actually sent out an alert asking our people to call and ask for her nomination to be withdrawn. And so we've weighed in. I think that Senator Lee has heard lots of groups. You know, I'm sure he doesn't have to be told, but he knows that he's got some support on this. So this will be interesting to see how he responds to this today. But before I lose you, Paul, by the way, we'll put your article from Powerline on our Facebook page so that people read it in detail. It's not just the Democrats. I know that you know that. We have a situation where Mitch McConnell is conducting a Senate that I think is in session, two and a half days a week? And really, from my perspective, not doing their diligence in running these nominees through. I'd love your perspective.
Oh, you're absolutely right again, Sandy. I mean, there's this backlog. You know, the Republicans have in fact been involved. Four of the top positions of the Justice Department are unfilled. Cory Gardner, actually, the senator from Colorado, gets the blame there. He held them hostage to the issue of marijuana in his state. Wants the feds not to enforce, or to say they're not going to enforce marijuana law in those states. They haven't been enforcing it, but Gardner wants to make it official. That blocked four key nominees. But the larger point is the Senate's inability or unwillingness to work a full week. There was a slate of about six nominees the other day and last week or the week before, and McConnell finally said, look, if you don't, we don't confirm these, we're going to have to work Friday and maybe over the weekend. The horror, you know, imagine that. It's the Democrats that need to get on the campaign trail. They're the ones who are defending most of these tough seats. They don't want to be in Washington. So if the majority leader, you know, forces them to stay in Washington, they'll start yielding on these nominees as they did the other week. So it's time to play hardball. We're seeing a little bit more hardball from the majority leader, but we're also seeing the calendar shrinking pretty fast, believe it or not, you know, the way the Senate is. By June, the calendar, you know, the calendar is almost, you know, there's not that much left on the calendar. So it's really time to amp up the hardball and get these nominations filled, including those four key spots at the Justice Department.
Yes, and when we wonder why so many policies that are coming out of the Trump administration do not reflect his views, it's because it's Obama holdovers, career Democrats, never Trumpers, subverting and trying to stop him in every single way they can. If it's not through the courts, they'll do it through the bureaucracy and slowing things down. So I think that's really what we're seeing happen. But Paul, I really appreciate your input. It's hard to believe that that Senator Mitch McConnell would deliberately, I don't know if it's just old age or if he is deliberately stopping this. Just 10 seconds from you on that.
I don't know the reason. I think he has too much respect for Senate traditions. You know, he's old-fashioned, and he plays the game the way it was played decades ago, and plays it well if it were decades ago. But it's not decades ago. It's now, and we need to play hardball.
Yes, I agree. All right, Paul Mirogoff. Paul, a pleasure. As always, we'll put your article on Kai Feldblum on our Facebook page so that people can read and share it and maybe make a phone call today to get that nomination withdrawn. Thank you so much, Sandy Rios, and thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back. Actually, I'll be in meetings tomorrow, but Fred Jackson will be sitting right here giving you the latest news. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.